Thanks very much for coming along to this meeting about our work to benchmark sustainability standards in wine. And specifically, today is the launch of what we're calling our global reference framework, which we will be using to make that benchmarking process happen. What we want to be able to do with an SWR is to undertake a robust benchmarking of all the existing wine sustainability standards. Now, slightly depending on how you count, there's anywhere between about 40 and 70, depending on whether you include standards which are tangential to wine, but not directly looking at wine. Whilst that on one level makes sense, the trouble is this plethora of standards causes immense confusion. Retailers can't communicate effectively with consumers about what sustainable wine is. I mean, a lot of the retailers we've talked to say they want to be able to say all the wines on that shelf over there are sustainable. And at the moment, that's not possible. From the perspective of consumers, they can't necessarily tell the difference between a label that says wines of Alentejo or another one that says Vinos de Chile or another one that says sustainable wine Australia. So they get confused. And we already know that there's a lot of confusion and cynicism in some quarters in consumers about what sustainability actually means. But also it works further down the supply chain as well. Producers lack clarity about the robustness of the standards. We were talking a few days ago to one of our big producer members, and they were saying that they want clarity about whether the standards that they're certifying their wines to are seen as being robust. And obviously, all of this is taking place in a situation where the environment around sustainability is changing quite rapidly. We're seeing regulatory requirements increasing quite markedly. I mean, I was chairing a conference on other agricultural supply chains last week, and there's a huge concern and huge interest in what, for example, the EU is doing. But there's also a greater focus on the risks of greenwashing, i.e., companies making claims to which they have no evidence. And so we've developed the Global Reference Framework as a means to address this challenge. Now, that obviously begs the question, why not, if you've got confusion around there being so many standards around the place, why not just develop one central global standard that defines this is what we mean by sustainability in wine, which is something that I think in its early days, SWR had considered doing. The main reason for not doing that, apart from the fact we have, as a number of our members are standards organizations, but actually the key thing is this local relevance. Most of the standards that are in existence have been established to respond to the specific considerations in sometimes quite tight geographic areas. We talk about terroir in relation to the wines we drink, so why should there not also be similar multiplicity in standards? So therefore, our role as SWR is to provide comparability between those standards whilst preserving that local specificity. However, it's also in developing the reference framework been important to look beyond wine. If one just benchmarks existing sustainability standards in wine, that presumes that those sustainability standards have managed to capture everything that sustainability in wine might actually entail. Is that necessarily the case? Toby, James, and I, and others in SWR have worked across lots of different sectors over quite literally decades. And there is a lot of great experience out there from other sectors, analogous sectors, that wine can learn from. Wine doesn't have to start from scratch. We can build on the shoulders of others. But also, wider evidence base provides a more robust understanding of what sustainability is. And we want to create a robust evidence base where there's, as far as it's ever possible to do, an objective statement of this is what we believe sustainability in wine means. So it moves from being something which is potentially arguable and subjective to something which is evidence-based and objective. That then begs the question about whether or not a reference framework can ever be the final word in everything. Quite a lot of the existing sustainability standards in wine allow the wines to label themselves as sustainable wine, which, if you think about it for a moment, is really odd because it implies that everything that might ever be known about sustainability has already been anticipated and managed. And you only need to look at the wider use of the term sustainable development to realize how our understanding of what that term means has evolved greatly over time. Sustainable development was first coined as a phrase by the Brundtland Commission in 1987. But at that stage, the environmental focus was pretty much only on deforestation in tropical forests. For example, the interplay between social and environmental issues was not well understood. So I think it's important, therefore, to say that sustainability is a journey which necessarily evolves over time. So there are things that we know today that even a year ago or 10 years ago, we didn't know around sustainability. Similarly, in a year's time, we will know things about sustainability, particularly in wine, that we don't know at the moment. So what we need to do and what we've tried to do with the Global Reference Framework is to define the key issues as we see them now and what best practice looks like in addressing those. But that process then needs to be repeated. That process needs to be reviewed, as most standards themselves review over time. It needs to be reviewed, for example, every couple of years. And we can also then build from an SWR perspective on what we're doing elsewhere, for example, in the packaging space and increasingly in the logistics of wine packaging. So in developing the global reference framework, we've built on research. And by research, this is a mixture of desk research and a lot of interviews. I've probably done anywhere upwards of 100 interviews over the last sort of year or so to people across the wine supply chain and in other sectors. So we've tried on, firstly, to build on existing knowledge and experience in the wine sector. As I say, there's already at least 40 standards, between 40 and 70, depending on how you want to count. So there's massive experience there already. But secondly, to look at other sectors, what can we learn from elsewhere? But then also to say, well, where do we go from here? Sustainability needs to address the whole supply chain, whereas at the moment, most of what we know about sustainability in wine is focused on practice at the vineyard and winery. And whilst that experience and that knowledge is extremely good, that's not everything that there is to know. So what's missing? What else do we need to know? And those are some of the gaps which we've filled some up, or beginning to fill some up, but we need to fill more over time. So we've looked first at what's known in the wine sector itself. I think at last count, I'd been through 38 of the existing standards. And obviously some of those are national ones. So things like Suave from Australia, Equalitas in Italy. Some are more specifically geographically focused. So you've got things like Wines of Alentejo and Certified California Sustainable Wine Growing. And then you have others which have been applied to wine, but are not themselves designed to, initially anyway, wine specific. So things like Fair Trade. So there's a huge amount of experience there. But also there's guidance from the international organizations dealing with wines. So OIV, for example, has their guide for the implementation of principles of sustainable vitiviniculture. FIVS, Global Wine Producers Environmental Sustainable Principles. And then, of course, there's the work that Intertek has done, which has been backed by Systembolaget and the Nordic Monopolies. So building on that experience as well, and really trying to build out on what Intertek have been doing over the last 2 or 3 years. This is the headlines of some of the issues that are typically covered in existing wine sustainability standards. So there's a lot of environment, particularly around practice of the vineyard, carbon greenhouse gases, issues around commerciality, and obviously bearing in mind the three pillars of sustainability, one of which, of course, is the sort of financial and economic sustainability of institutions in the sector, issues around human and social practice. And then there's issues which I've in this slide called outliers, issues which are dealt with in some, but not by, in many cases, fairly few standards. So that's typically what has come out of our review of existing standards. What we've then done, as I've said, is go beyond wine. Now, when we first started this process, I sort of proposed also looking at sectors quite different from wine, for example, oil and gas and mining, which I've worked in extensively over the years. And the point was made, well, actually, let's just stick with expertise and experience that is proximate to or already used in relevance to wine. But that still provides a pretty significant set of additional expertise to build into what we've been doing with the GRF. ISO 26000, obviously ISO has standards around a great many issues. And ISO 26000 is supposed to be, is aimed at companies and businesses committed to operating in a socially responsible way, and is intended to be applicable to pretty much companies in all sectors. There's the Sustainable Agriculture Initiative. I was on a panel with them last week, and they are focusing on agricultural supply chains. There's a considerable analogy between what they do and wine. And again, like with SWR, they cover the full waterfront from farmers and growers at one end all the way to retailers at the other. So there's very much an analogy with what we're trying to do in wine. And they have a particular focus on beef, dairy and cereal crops. Sustainable palm oil, arguably the palm debate has been one of the most controversial in agricultural supply chains. And it's still a matter of considerable, I was going to say debate, but actually battle is perhaps a better term, between the EU and some of the countries in Southeast Asia. But the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil a few years ago introduced the principles and criteria for the production of sustainable palm oil. So again, I think there's an analogy there with what we're trying to do in wine. Moving slightly more broadly out, the Consumer Goods Forum obviously looks at consumer goods more generally, so not just agricultural commodities. So consumer goods, for example, could include electronics and so on. But again, the analogy with what we're trying to do at SWR is there. So they've got 400 members. And what they found was that when it came to sustainability standards, and obviously you can imagine, given the diversity of goods that they deal with, there's literally hundreds of schemes. I mean, we think we've got a lot with wine standards. If you go more broadly, the amount of sustainability schemes that are out there are huge. It's difficult for organizations to know which ones to trust. And so they've developed the Sustainable Supply Chain Initiative, which is designed, like we're trying to do with the Global Reference Framework, to provide a process by which those hundreds of schemes can be cross-compared. I mean, Toby's not here, so he can't joke about me talking about the Rosetta Stone, but we want something that actually allows there to be a cross-translation between those different things. Then obviously there's the Amphori BSCI standard, which is already applied in some cases to wine. And again, it's a membership organization. So again, analogous to SWR. And again, looks at the challenge along the supply chain rather than it just being around saying this is a challenge for one part of the industry or another. Tries to say, actually, this is a collaborative set of issues which we need to address collectively. So in building the global reference framework, what we've done is we built on not just what goes on in wine, but also to try and pick out expertise and lessons that we can draw from other organizations and processes which are analogous to what we're trying to do in wine and build that into the GRF to hopefully provide more robustness, more three-dimensionality, build on more experience, not just in wine. But as I say, there's also been a need to fill in gaps on what's missing. We know an awful lot about what sustainability means as it applies to vineyards and wineries, because that has been pretty much the entire focus of work on wine sustainability standards to date. But we don't know a great deal about the rest of the supply chain. And I would say, actually, this is the case also in many other agricultural supply chains. If you look at tea, coffee, cocoa, spices, vegetables, there's been an awful lot of focus in sustainability around the production end, but not really very much about what happens further on the supply chain. You know, how it gets from farm gate to a port, how it gets from port to destination market. So wine is not unusual in there being that gap around the rest of the supply chain. But obviously wine can't say it's sustainable until it's sustainable from the point of creation all the way to the point of consumption and the bottles being dealt with. And again, what we've been able to do there, and we will continue to do, is to build on the other stuff we're doing within SWR. So for example, as many of you will know, we launched the Bottle Weight Accord a month or so ago. We're also doing work around logistics and other aspects of the value chain. And as those projects develop over time, the knowledge built, the experience built through those will be added to the global reference framework as we expand it. And obviously, as we continue to have conversations with our members and others in the sector, we will build that knowledge into the framework. So that's the work we've done in developing the framework. We see this as the first global statement of what sustainability in wine actually means at present. And bear in mind, by at present, by that I mean sustainability is a journey. So this is what we know at the moment, and that will continue to evolve. What we want is to have a strong evidence base, having gone outside wine as well, to try and define a definitive evidence base about what that sustainability looks like. It's intended as a shared resource. One of the challenges that the wine sector faces is it's very fragmented. And what we want is to try and bring that expertise and knowledge together. And we hope, for example, with the Bottle Weight Accord, we've been able to come up with a shared common position on, right, this is what we need to be doing, that everyone can buy into, rather than everyone basing their actions on a slightly different analysis of things. So if we can be in a position where the GRF is seen as being, right, this is our shared view on what sustainability looks like, and everyone can critique, put their comments in, we have a shared understanding of the problem. But it's a reference, it's not a certification. We're not seeing the GRF as something which wineries and vineyards will certify themselves to. That's the business of the existing certification standards. It's also important to say that the detail that we've put into the GRF, it goes further than high level, but we're not seeking to define detailed practice. Because that detailed practice will need, as it already is in most of the sustainability standards, defined by the local realities. So, for example, take something like water management. That may be more or less of an issue depending on where in the world you're dealing with it. In some cases, managing water might be about managing far too much of it, where you've got flooding. And in other places, it might be around managing there being too little of it. So the precise detail of what gets done will needs to be defined as it currently is by existing sustainability standards. What we want is something that says, right, here are effectively all the boxes that need to be ticked. And as long as those have been ticked, even if the specifics are different, then that's what needs to happen. And really, as I said at the top of the conversation, it's about transparency in the sector. It's what sustainability is and what's not good enough. There does need to be a point at which a low bar to entry is too low a bar to entry. And over time, that needs to rise. There needs to be a point at which it's clear that a standard can say, hand on heart, right, we've been benchmarked against the SWR's global reference framework, and we're seen as being of an acceptable standard. And that will be a good pushback against greenwashing. So that's how we see the reference framework fitting in. So what does it incorporate? Much of this structure will be familiar to existing, an analysis of existing standards, governance, environmental performance in the winery, in the vineyard, in the winery. I've called them human and social issues, because that seemed to be slightly less challenging than talking about human rights or labor rights, packaging, logistics, and distribution. To start off with governance, again, in just picking out some of the point, materiality analysis, not everyone can do everything at the same time to the same extent. Really having a plan and being able to know these are the things you really need to address. And I've talked about water as an example. In some places, that'll be much more of a priority than it is in others. And it's pretty key to have that in place. I've got economic sustainability in there. I put that within the governance piece, even though theoretically by sustainability, it's, you know, economic sustainability is one of the pillars. The challenge was, as was put to me by various people when I was putting this together, if you start having as something that gets monitored, do you have a business plan? Can you manage your cash flow? Do you check your bank account regularly? It starts to sound, when you're talking to business, a bit pejorative. I think the point is to make sure that whatever gets done around sustainability, that is balanced against other commercial imperatives. Another key thing under the management piece is this thing about continuous improvement, which again builds on the materiality issue. It's a question of start where you start and gradually improve over time. I mean, those of you who were at the human rights workshop last week, Jan Wies from Nestle was saying there's a point at which you've just got to find out what's out there and then say, right, let's start off with these things, right, and then we'll do these things next year, and they can then be planned into an accounting, to a business management process. The review and communication, I'm going to pick out the external audit and verification, because obviously that is hugely important. There needs to be, from an external point of view, something, verification, certification, whatever you want to call it, that enables a company to be able to say hand on heart and demonstrate externally that it is doing what it claims it's doing. There is, however, a balance point to be had between an audit process which is sufficiently robust to be credible, but then one which is too onerous for smaller vineyards and smaller organizations to be able to participate in. We'll come to that again later on, but there's a balancing point to be had there. Unsurprisingly, quite a lot to be said at environmental management in the vineyard. And I don't think there's much there that I particularly need to pick up on, as in it would really be probably telling quite a lot of people on this call how to teach their grandmother to suck eggs. But I think it's important, again, that not everyone is going to be able to address all of these issues all at once. So again, that's where the materiality piece comes in. And really, that's under that second major heading, the management plan, really making sure that there's clarity about what gets done over time. And also that key thing about vineyard mapping, that there may be issues which are not issues for the whole of a wine estate, but are issues for part of it. So having that sense of horses for courses in terms of what's being done. Again, to environmental management in the winery. And again, there's a point here between, as it were, ongoing winery management, but then also what happens, for example, when a new winery is being established. I mean, there's actually a new one being built about 2 kilometres that way. So again, issues like site selection, winery management. Actually, one thing I want to come back to, I said I wasn't going to go into many of these points on the cultivar selection. I think that's potentially quite an interesting issue. You know, as we're moving to a situation where there are differences in, we're beginning to get almost embedded changes in weather patterns. Does that mean that we need, for example, to think about use of grape varieties which are more suited to a local circumstance rather than defaulting to sort of international, what one might term as sort of international grape varieties? Some of the growers I've been talking to say, well, actually, if we use grape cultivars which are used to this environment or used to a particular environment, maybe it's better for us to use them than the usual Cab Sauv, Merlot, whoever else. So there are some interesting issues there, I think. So moving forward, the human and social issues in our review of existing wine sustainability standards, most are pretty good on, I guess, what one might call personnel management. So things like job specifications, induction processes, use of PPE and safety training. There's pretty good practice around that. sort of area. But what we've tried to bring in at this stage is the increasing focus on sort of slightly more complicated issues. Some of those issues as reflected by some of the, both of the reports looking at the, from Oxfam looking at the wine industry in Italy, and the FinWatch one looked at the wine industry in South Africa, but also the recent coverage of what's been going on in both Bordeaux and Champagne. But rather than put those in there as standalone issues, what we've tried to do is to build it into that existing process management. So, for example, under procedures for direct hiring, ID check. If there is a requirement to check the IDs of every worker on site, be that full-time staff or temporary staff, that does help pick up on trafficked and migrant labour. Procedures for indirect hiring. As we know from what we've seen in all of the four places I've just spoken about, the use of external employment agencies has been a key challenge around why those abuses have come into the wine sector. So again, if it gets managed through existing processes, then it can be evolved from what wineries and standards have in place at the moment. Payments and benefits, so wage and overtime rates and deductions. One of the issues that's come out in relation to trafficked labour is that costs are put upon the worker. They're deducted from their pay by an employment agency. So even if they, in theory, are getting paid the proper wage, that is not what they are receiving. Accommodation under that employee conditions. It was poor accommodation that led to the deaths of at least one of the five who died in Champagne. So again, making sure that that accommodation is of good quality is important. Freedom of association and free collective bargaining to ensure that workers have a correct voice. So what we've tried to do is, rather than put what I term human rights issues as standalones, what we've tried to do is to build them into existing human being management processes that wine business will have in place, and the procedures and processes which standards certifying those wine businesses will already have. So it can be an evolution of what's in place at the moment rather than having to put in something completely new. Obviously, then on the end is the community relationships piece, which in many cases, why existing wine sustainability standards are in place, the sense that they feel the need for them to be part of a local community. As I say, we've also tried to move beyond just practice at vineyard and winery. So we brought in the learnings from our wine bottle weight study that sustainability should, I think, in future require that for 750ml bottles, they shouldn't exceed 420 grams, and use of recycled materials for other packaging, and really then explore use of other packaging to reduce the environmental impact. Many of you will know we have in place quite detailed plans to take forward our work on packaging over the next year. So expect this page to be more full when we do the next iteration of the GRF in a year or so's time. Then we're also doing work on logistics and the onward supply chain. So issues around air freight, a very easy way of reducing carbon is to not use air freight. Then with shipping, bulk shipping obviously is desirable because that much reduces the carbon impact of transporting glass. But if that's not possible or not seen as being desirable, making sure that requirements of shippers includes things like slow steaming, use of sails, perhaps the use of electric batteries in port, that sort of thing. And then when it comes to terrestrial transport, a preference for trains because they are less carbon intensive, where possible, electric vehicles. But if electric vehicles aren't possible, to make sure that drivers are trained to drive efficiently. That's the headlines of what we've got in the global reference framework. This is what we see sustainability in wine at the moment to mean. The reason we put this together is not just because we think it's desirable and useful in its own right, but because we feel it's a tool, believe it's a tool that allows us to, in an objective and robust way, evaluate how far existing standards reflect that understanding of sustainability. And so our work over the next year will be to benchmark existing standards against the global reference framework. That begs the question why we talked about it a bit at the top of the conversation, but it begs the question about why the benchmarking is needed. And I think you can make the argument that there's huge relevance for it along the value chain. Standards owners need to know that their standard is sufficiently rigorous and that will be accepted as rigorous across the supply chain, rigorous and credible. Wine businesses need to know that the standards they use to demonstrate to their buyers that they are developing good sustainability practice, they need to know that those standards are robust. Other wine industry actors, they need to know what sustainability means for other parts of the wine value chain, not just at vineyard and winery. From the perspective of regulators, they need to have it clearly presented to them that the wine industry gets what sustainability means for it and is taking robust action on those issues. And obviously, it means also that media and campaigners have a benchmark by which to understand whether or not wine businesses are genuine about sustainability, or is it just greenwash? So again, it's an ability to demonstrate, look, we're not just talking about it. This is what we understand it to be. This is what we're doing about it. So it really provides transparency and robustness there. However, there are some quite considerable challenges to benchmarking. I mean, the first of which obviously is context. There are those differences at local levels. Different standards cover different issues. Some have a different scope. Different geographies cover different elements of the supply chain. There's different approaches, perhaps in the level of detail, how the aims are expressed, and differences around how the audit process works, you know, how much, how often, and by whom. The biggest challenge to a benchmarking process is what, for want of a better term, I'm calling the philosophy of standards. And if you map, and this is a rough mapping of a small number of standards, if you map standards, broadly, they divide into sort of two categories. Those where a relatively low bar has been set for entry, but the idea being that that means that a large proportion of the wine businesses in that geography can be members. You know, for example, SWGB, Swins, Soir have set a relatively low bar, but as a result, they've got a very high proportion of the industry in that location as a member. There are other standards that will say, no, we need to set a very, very high bar. Sustainable Wine California, Wines of Alentejo, they say, no, we need to set a very high bar. And if that means we've got a relatively narrower membership base, well, so be it. We need people to demonstrate excellence before they come in. Both of those approaches, logically, are completely and utterly acceptable and make complete sense. But over time, what we need is to get to a stage where there's a high bar for entry, that excellence is required, but there is also coverage of a larger proportion of the industry in any given area. So that is perhaps the biggest challenge in benchmarking of standards, because philosophically, the standards are starting from quite different positions. So we then have to think, well, what do we want sustainability standards to do both now and in the future? Now we need to make sure that they can demonstrate that they are covering the issues as defined in the GRF that we know to be material to sustainability. But we also need them to require a high enough level of performance to demonstrate that it's meaningful. It's not sort of a 5-meter swimming badge, that there is actually enough robustness to be consistent with the belief that the wineries certified to that standard are serious about sustainability. But over time, what we need are standards which cover all relevant sustainability issues, require a high level of performance, but also a high degree of inclusivity and collaboration. And also, perhaps over time, we need to think about standards reflecting the needs of different parts of the supply chain. As I said before, at the moment, most of what we know is around what goes on at the vineyard and winery. But perhaps over time, we need a standard for wine logistics. Maybe we need a standard for wine retail. We're not there yet, but that's perhaps something we need to be thinking about down the path. But there are, as I say, other things we need of standards. This question of inclusivity is really important. You talk to a lot of smaller vineyards. They say, well, we'd love to do sustainability. We'd love to be certified to whichever standard, but we simply don't have the time. So there does need to be a real consideration of not just about how much hectareage a standard might cover, but how many individual businesses are part of it. There needs to be an inclusive process. That inclusivity also needs to start discussing some of the more complicated systemic issues, particularly around perhaps, you know, the labour rights issues. And in some cases, you're seeing some of the Appellation or DOCs actually beginning to do it. Prosecco, for example, is saying, well, actually, we see sustainability as being something for Prosecco DOC as a whole, not just for one or two of them. And that therefore, they're trying to develop processes by which larger wine businesses are supporting smaller ones. Civil society engagement with them. WETA, for example, in South Africa, requires auditors to work with local NGOs. So there's an understanding of what needs to be looked for, what potential challenges might be. Quite a lot of standards have as acceptable practice compliance with the law, particularly in relation to labour issues. And that's not consistent for two reasons. First of all, a lot of the issues that are covered in wine standards around environmental practice are also legally mandated. So if it's okay still, even if something's legally mandated, you know, for example, don't use poisonous herbicides, why have that in the standard if it's already legally required? I mean, take recent challenges in Champagne and Bordeaux. There are laws in place in France and in both of those regions that militate against problems in relation to management of labour. the fact that those laws were in place did not stop bad practices happening. So there needs to be robustness within a standard that we are proactively looking for these things, even if there's a law in place that says that's required. Right. So where do we go next? Where does SWR go over the next year or so? The first thing will be to develop a scoring matrix based on the GRF. And that will need to cover governance issues, the range of issues covered by a standard, the level of attainment achieved, all of those other things. But there needs to be an ability to balance that. At the moment, standards are coming from different perspectives. So, for example, some standards may score well because they are very good in terms of the range of issues they cover. Others may score well because they set a high bar as to what's required. Others may score well because they include a large spectrum of the wind businesses in their area. So obviously a scoring matrix therefore needs to reflect the different approaches to standards, which I've talked about, but needs to weed out those that aren't serious. But over time, that scoring matrix needs to be the same scoring matrix that over time raises the bar about what acceptable is. And so standards will therefore need improving scores over time. So when we put that scoring matrix together, we will then use that to benchmark, to evaluate the existing standards in the wine. We'll start with the initial 20, probably the 20 ones we would have seen as the most significant in terms of coverage, to try and work out where gaps exist in relation to the GRF. What's vital, though, is that it's a collaborative approach. Because some of the conversations I've occasionally had with standards organizations, they can get quite prickly. That's not the intention. What we're not trying to do here is to pick holes or criticize. What we've tried to do with the GRF is to say, by building on the experience that everyone in the wine sector's got and on other sectors, we see the GRF as being an objective statement of this is what sustainability means. It's not my view. It's not Tom's view. It's not any individual person's view. This is what objectively wine sustainability requires. And we're trying to raise the bar for the industry as a whole. Equally, we need to be open to comment or critique. So if when you get the copy of the standard in the next few days, there are points you want to raise, absolutely bring them back to us. In the discussions with the individual standards organizations, it needs to be an open discussion. It's not about us coming in to mark people's homework. Sometimes, and I'm not going to name names, but sometimes I think some of the retailers have gone into standards organizations and there has been a sense of there being a little tension there. And we want to try and avoid that. But equally, we need to make sure there's a balance between engaging. We want to really work and engage with standards organizations, but recognize they're busy people, sometimes already feel themselves to be over benchmark. So we need to find a balancing point between engaging, but not being intrusive, engaging in a way that's constructive. So that's how we want to do it. In terms of the process, the way we're thinking about it at the moment is that we will do, against the GRF, we will do an internal review, evaluation and benchmark of each standard. It was suggested that also perhaps we ask each standard to benchmark itself, but that may in some cases be seen as being, look, this is time we don't have to do that. So maybe the way forward is that we do an internal review and benchmark, and then we come to an individual organization and say, right, fabulous on all these points, but we think there might be some issues to be discussed here, here, and here. So effectively, the discussion becomes around exceptions. So we don't look at everything. We look at those only those areas where there is a need to discuss. And then obviously agree with benchmarking and then identify if there are changes that are needed. Perhaps there's the bar needs to be raised, that actually then there's not a high enough bar required, or it could be that there's an issue that's not adequately covered, whatever that is, that there's an agreement that, right, this is what needs to happen. That may not be able to happen immediately because most standards organizations don't review their standard each year. They may be doing it every 2 or 3 years. So we might have to fit into those timeframes. But then we do require standards to improve over time. Initially, I think the aim would be to ensure that most standards will pass because we don't want this to be a confrontation approach. But it may be that standards pass for very different reasons. Some might pass because they've got a great coverage of all the issues. So they cover both environment and social and everything well. Others might score well because they set a very high bar, for example, around, you know, practice and environmental practice in vineyard and winery. Others may pass because they've got a very inclusive base. Now, over time, everyone will need to get to high requirements. Everyone needs to get to the stage where they cover all the issues. Everyone needs to get to the point of inclusivity. But it's how we raise that bar over time. So just the last sort of why we think this is important, because obviously SWR's core funding really pays for, you know, keep the lights on. So any other additional work we do, for example, on standards, for example, on inputs, for example, on packaging, we have to fund separately. why we think it's important that that happens is that actually there are real benefits. And for example, with the work we've done on bottle weight, there are actually direct cost savings to some of the organizations that have been involved with that. Legal compliance by working with us on sustainability standards, you know, be much easier to demonstrate legal compliance on issues like scope 3 emissions and so on. We've talked about greenwash a lot. Collaboration, you know, rather than everyone having to do their own benchmarking process, just do one that then also becomes authoritative. It's not just one company's benchmark or the SWR benchmark, it belongs to the whole sector. And we know, because we've done it with the bottle weight accord, that collaborative action works. So we know that this approach will work in this space as well. Someone's raised the question, Jonathan Rodwell, could we address the idea of a current scorecard which gives a starting measure of total carbon imprint sustainability deficiency for a company? The carbon piece, obviously that's part of a bigger question around sustainability. And one of the questions that we've been discussing a lot recently, both internally and with some of our members, is do we at some stage need to do a benchmarking process for carbon calculators? Because at the moment, there's quite a lot of them out there, and it's not always clear that they are exactly measuring the same thing. So maybe there is some work at some stage we've done on that. But for the time being, I think we've got our work cut out just with what we're doing. To take the second half of that question, sustainability deficiencies. Deficiency is a pejorative word, but I think that's what we want. Where a standard has got gaps, that's what the benchmarking process is designed to tease out. Packaging, the kegging solution included, what we've done with packaging so far has specifically been on wine bottle weight, because that seemed like, relatively straightforward. That's a bit like saying flying is easy, just throw yourself at the ground and miss. But it seemed to be a good starting point in packaging. What we want to do next, and we actually might also send out to everyone the next steps on packaging document, because absolutely things like kegging, bulk shipping, use of keg in on trade, absolutely something we want to look at. Florencia, hello there. First batch of benchmark standards ready for the end of next year. Yes, absolutely. Necessarily, I think this is going to be an iterative process. As I say, we want it to be as constructive as possible. So that might mean a certain amount of backwarding and forwarding between us and the standards organizations. We want to try and get perhaps an initial batch out by, I don't know, midsummer next year, and then the remainder by the end of the year. So yes, as soon as possible. Alexander Carl, I suggest each region certification body would then be certified. Not certified, because we're not seeing ourselves as a certification body. What we see the reference framework as being is quite simply, it's a statement of what do we know sustainability and wine means. Then to what extent does each sustainability standard reflect that? And if there are gaps, how can we work with those sustainability standards to address those gaps? So in practical terms, the process will stay the same as it currently is, as in individual wineries will certify to whichever standard that they feel is most appropriate to them. But what the benchmarking against the GRF will do is be able to say, right, all of these standards, whichever they are, even if they've made that qualifying score through different ways, the fact is they are all seen as being a sufficient statement of commitment to sustainability to be seen as acceptable. Now, over time, that bar will rise. So it might be that a standard which is seen as being an acceptable statement of sustainability this year may not be the year after. Alexander, you got your hand up. So do you want to sort of clarify on that?
I suppose my other question leading on from that is, within the reference framework, will there be levels of sustainability, if you see what I mean, rather than is it going to be a pass-fail in terms of the global reference framework, or do we see that there will be a gold star, a bronze star, a silver star?
No, I think it sort of ends up being a bit of both. It's not a sort of a bronze, silver, gold. It's got to be where an individual standard has got gaps by comparison to the GRF. We need to identify what those are and develop a process for filling those gaps with that individual standards organization. So it'll be a question of how are we going to make sure that you do reflect this global understanding of what sustainability in wine looks like. As to a pass-fail, what we want, I think, is gradually to raise the bar over time. So what will be seen as being acceptable of a sustainability standard, the bar will rise. So for example, those standards which are very inclusive but set quite a low bar, unless they raise that bar consistently over time, then they will no longer be seen as passing. Equally, if you have a standard which may set a very high bar, but really is excluding almost everyone in the area, equally, they may find over time that they are excluded. So how that expands over time will change. Well, you've got your hand. Does that, sorry, Alexander, does that answer your point?
You know, that does. That does. Cool.
Just a quick question around different sectors of the industry, right? Not everyone has a growing operation and a winery operation and a packaging operation and a logistics operation. So in two different ways, will it be, is there going to be a way that certain standards say, let's take fish friendly farming. I don't know if Balloral's on the line or whatever. I'm not really interested in certifying transport logistics. I'm only setting out to do here. I don't want to be penalized because I don't cover that area. But I can stand, you know, but someone can certify their vineyards with me because, you know, that covers that area comprehensively. And then equally, if there's a someone in the wine supply chain, let's say just a grower, will they be able to say, well, the certification gets sort of a benefit for helping them hand over from one section to the next section of the supply chain? In that there's often a kind of an interconnected web of things. And sometimes we can't have one certification covering everything because they're owned by different people and they're in different control.
I think that's a fair point, Will. And I do think, I mean, you mentioned fish friendly farm is a good one. Salmon safe is another one. I know you've made the point in the past about, can you, as it were, piece together enough badges to demonstrate performance across the piece? And I think a good example of that would be what you see in South Africa. If you look at something like Wheata, it's excellent on the human rights issues, but it's not so good on the environmental issues. So they work alongside a standard which looks more at the environmental piece. And so I think that sort of join up is absolutely fine. We don't want to have to oblige someone, as you say, that perhaps only wants to look at environmental practice at vineyard level. Well, actually, as long as that's what they say, that's the bit we decide we want to cover, as long as they can then say to wineries, well, actually, you also need to have something else which covers the rest of it. I think that's acceptable. And I think those are, I think, some of the challenges we're going to find as we go through this process. But I think the point is, as long as along the supply chain, we've got a clear understanding of what we understand collectively by sustainability, and that that can be transparently communicated along the supply chain, that's got to be the aim. If that gets done through perhaps an individual wine business having two or three different things which collectively add up to the same thing, I think that's absolutely fine. But I think that's probably one of those challenges we're going to be dealing with as we move forward.
No, yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking would have to happen, but I just wanted to, you know, hear that you guys were thinking in the same direction. So that's great.
I think it's got to, we can't oblige people who see their role as being one thing to say, well, we think it should be something else as well, because that's just silly. Yeah. As long as they can say, we will cover you for this bit, but we don't cover you for that bit, then actually that's fine. Right, to go back to the, as there's no more hands raised at the moment, to go back to the questions in the chat, come from Ben Smith, do you see this eventually leading to a conclusion about which stands are best? The aim is not to issue some sort of, you know, like when you're at school and you got graded as the, you know, did you come first equal in maths, or were you like me, usually at sort of about 27th equal? We're not about trying to do that. This isn't about calling out. This is about trying to get to the point where everything's best. And that'll take time to get to. What we hope we've got with the GRF, or what we believe we've got with the GRF, is an objective framework to help know what best looks like. And then everyone can then say, right, well, I've got gaps here, so how do I work on those? So it's not about trying to create a hierarchy. It's supporting everyone and getting to be best. Wine tourism, we hadn't considered wine tourism because it's not something we've kind of got to yet. And I think also you can make some interesting comments about wine tourism, you know, that you can have an extremely well-run vineyard, but if it does wine tourism and people fly in a private helicopter, then that might have some ramifications for the sustainability of that. So that's not something we particularly cover, but that's because we haven't yet really thought about wine tourism. We've started off with what we know, and as we know more, we will include those things, and wine tourism will almost certainly be one of those. I think the scoring metric's a great idea. How long do you estimate it will take to put together and tailor to different countries and certifications? Well, answer as soon as possible, especially if we want to try and get, answer to previous conversation, we want to try and get standard certified quickly. I think the way we're proposing to do it when we've got the money to do it is to, for us to come out with what that matrix might look like, but then also to get a small group of people in the industry to sort of put their thoughts in as well. And we want to make sure this is something that draws on lots of experience, not just my view on what might happen after I've had a couple of bottles of decent Plonk. So as soon as possible. Corks, yes, that is something that needs to go into the packaging piece. One of the things we want to try and cover in our ongoing work on packaging is closures, sustainability of closures, collection of corks, capsules, all that sort of thing. That's an issue which we're working on within the next phase of our packaging work. Tonya, you're very naughty, raising the question about Regen A. You're absolutely right. And again, my view is that there's quite a lot of expressions that get used in sustainability where people presume it's as well understood as, you know, shoe or left foot, whereas regen ag is still in the foothills of really people knowing what that actually means. Certainly what I've seen with some of the sustainability standards is there's begun to be some exploration of what that might look like in particular geographies. And obviously regen ag is going to require quite different things depending on the growing conditions, the temperature, rainfall, all those sorts of things. But also by building on that experience, hopefully what we can then do as SWR is say, well, regen ag processes within wineries in different parts of the world start to look like this. So we can start to share that experience. And yes, and then on the organic and biodynamic, again, I think that's an interesting one because there sometimes is a sense that from growing terms, you can only be sustainable if you're biodynamic or organic, which ain't necessarily so. I don't know whether Dom's on, but he was saying when he'd just come back from Bordeaux because of challenges in this year's growing season. You know, some of the organic producers in Bordeaux were having to do 22, 23 tractor passes, which does start to rather question the carbon impact of some of these things. These are really big issues that we're only in the foothills of understanding. If we can use this process to try and draw out what that best practice looks like and different practice, then that's only got to be a good thing. Ken Pogash, I'd be interested in what you mean by geopolitical controversies, drawing energy away from implementing sustainability standards. Speaking as a social scientist, geopolitical always interests me as a term. If I put my own spin on what that question might mean, some of the issues that one faces, particularly around the sort of human issues, they are societally based. They're not one winery. You know, if you're looking at, I don't know, water management, you know, a winery could decide that it's going to put in a water harvesting system on the roof of its winery. If you're dealing with, for example, migrant labor in southern Italy, you've got quite a lot of societally based issues which are not within the remit of one organization to deal with. And I think that's why this inclusivity, this collaborative piece is so important, because it's only by collaborating on those things that one can come up with solutions that are actually going to work. So that's my interpretation of that question. And as Ken's not here to argue separately, then I'll put it, will education and the sharing of resources be part of this process? That's it, almost the entire reason for doing it. I mean, it's not the entire reason for doing it, because as I say, it's transparency. But absolutely, it's about sharing resources. The wine is incredibly fragmented. If you're talking about something like chocolate, if you've got Mars, Mondelez and Nestle in the room, you're covering about 80% of the chocolate market. Whereas in wine, you know, even Gallo, who are the biggest producer, they're only 3% of the market. Well, 3% is still a lot of wine, but it's fragmented. And what we found with the bottle weight work, which we've done over the last year, is a lot of experience and knowledge is already out there, but it's not being brought together. So when we did the bottle weight work, there was a lot of stuff we could already build on. And then it was a question, right, well, we need to go further here. We need to fill gaps here. If we can use this process also to draw out what best practice looks like, to draw out what experience is there, then that's good. And again, absolutely not all can afford to bring in different consultancy companies. And that's really part of our pitch for let's do these things to us, SWR. Surely it's better for a number of organizations to put cash into us doing this as SWR, rather than everyone spending quite a lot of tens of thousands of pounds or euros or dollars on hiring consultancies. Fine, there may be stuff that consultancies, and speaking as a consultant, that those things are needed for. But if there's things that can be done collectively, then that's got to be a sensible way forward. Chris, your point about certified sustainable, I guess my point about that was not who does and who doesn't. It's my point is that at the moment, we don't understand enough about what sustainability looks like in toto for anyone really to be able to say this is sustainable. You can say it's sustainable in relation to what we currently know about sustainability, but that's not to say it's sustainable. There's an absolute versus relative statement, which I think we've got to be careful of.
I was following up on Will's point. That's all.
Okay. Cheers, Chris. That's fine. No, that's fine. I hope I expressed myself reasonably well about in my thing to Will. Global Food Safety Initiative. Yes, we did look at that. The intel we get from CGF is that didn't perhaps work as well as it was intended to. We have had extremely good relationships in there, and it was an interesting endeavor, but perhaps didn't work as well as it was intended. So yes, we did look at it. You know, again, everything we've done as SWR it's not proprietary. What we're trying to do is to say, look, we're trying to move the whole industry forward here. And we hope that a collective approach, a collaborative approach is the best way of doing it. And so if people haven't got it, absolutely make sure it gets sent out. Ella, hello, Ella. There were within specific recommendations. We certainly think there will be standards relevant recommendations, because that's sort of the point of doing the benchmark. It's to identify where there are gaps. And I guess that will then reflect into what those standards organizations then do, both with SBTI and how they work with their wineries. We can't specify the level of detail right down to specific geographies because it's so different. But what we can do is say, here's the headlines, and then make sure that each standard knows where the gaps are that it needs to pick up and how it can learn from others in doing that. And already there's some good learning between standards organizations, and we want to facilitate more of that happening. I've got to the end of the questions on the chat. Are there any more questions for any more? Well, in which case, I will say thank you to everyone for coming. Thank you also to everyone who's kind of fed into this process along the way, being interviewed, whatever it is. These things don't just come deus ex machina. Any comment, any feedback, anything you want to sort of feed into this process will be very gratefully received. You know, this is a collective endeavor. We hope that as SWR, we can be kind of the spider at the center of the web that pulls in all this experience and expertise. So thank you all for coming along. And I will probably be talking to quite a lot of you over the next few weeks. And thanks again.